It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I've gotten so used to hearing recording in progress. I'm like, I don't think I've heard her say that in 4 weeks or something. Because it's just my car. You know what I miss? No, sorry. Let's do this in the format we've been doing it. You know what really my gears miss?
Just going to say that. What do your gears miss?
What my gears miss is movie tie-in songs whose music videos try and incorporate the film they're part of. Where like they, I mean, because there's some that are really lame where they're just like, here's footage from the movie and then we sing. But then there's ones where it's like the villain looks into his crystal ball and it's the band and they're performing and shit like that. And I feel like the 80s in particular really leaned into this. And I was reminded because I hadn't seen it before, possibly one of the best versions of this ever. From 1986's movie Legend. We all know 1986 movie Legend, a very young Tom Cruise, a very young Mia Sara, Tim Curry as the devil in one of the coolest outfits ever. In general, that movie has some of the coolest makeup effects and costuming of anything. It's amazing. A lot of people think it's pretty mediocre and shitty, which I understand. When I saw it when I was younger, I did too. I have grown to appreciate it because it's incredibly allegorical and it's just a very sort of good mythic good versus evil love story kind of thing, and it just looks amazing and it has incredible music, sort of. I mean, it originally, it Tangerine Dream did the soundtrack to it, and then at some point it got switched out. So now if you look for the soundtrack to Legend, it's very hard to find, and you may get an orchestral score that's completely unrelated. So when I was younger, my sister had it and I had a taped copy of it and I would listen to it all the time, but now it's very hard to get a hold of. Man, you're horking up things over there. I just saw a chicken fly out when you did that one. Not like a piece of chicken, like a baby chick. We'll get it in post. And so the other day I realized sometimes I listen to music on YouTube and that these songs that I can't really purchase on my Apple Tunes or get a CD of, or not that I know what I'd do with the CD at this point, I could probably get on YouTube. And so I did it. And I encountered the music video for 1986's song, Is Your Love Strong Enough? Performed by Brian Ferry, and it's amazing. The song is already incredibly 80s, like sexy saxophone solo during the bridge 80s song. I do like the song, but it is very much a product of its time. But the whole video is Brian Ferry not in a, like, the movie's a fantasy movie in like a very traditional fantasy sense. He's just sort of dressed in regular 80s rock clothes, just sort of hanging out like on set, but not behind the scenes, like in the movie. And they edit things. So like there are scenes where Mia Sara like sits down and is talking with somebody, and instead she sits down and then they cut to just Brian Ferry sort of standing there looking at her, presumably off screen. And then he sings things and she looks back with like expressions in response that are just cuts from a different scene in the movie. And like, and later, because there's bits. Have you've seen Legend?
No.
You should see Legend. It's real. You would like it for the effects, I think, in particular. Prosthetic and makeup effects. Like I said, amazing stuff.
Okay.
Tim Curry's is the famous one, but they do one with Alice Playten, I think. She's a voice actor most of the time, but she plays Blix the Goblin, and her look is amazing. It's really cool, and the voice she does for it is really cool. But there's a bit where Mia Sara is wandering these huge empty halls that darkness, aka the devil, has her kidnapped in. And it's very similar to that scene in Kroll, where you just have a pretty white girl in a white dress and she runs around these empty spaces. But so she does this, and then from off camera, Brian Ferry just sort of walks in and keeps singing. And like, those were shots from the movie, but then we just sort of put him here. And he's doing white guy dance the whole time. Like, you know, the kind of the Carlton kind of deal, like just the sort of swaying, but very much in a way that like people told him he had to, and he vaguely remembers. Cause like his heart is not in the motions at all. He's just singing, but just occasionally sort of like this. And it doesn't help that Brian Ferry, who I never had a visual of, looks like everyone's dad in the 80s. It looks like the front man for this band couldn't make it, and his dad came in to sub for him. Like, he doesn't look like a rock star to me. And then there's things where, like, because a large part of it is in the background, they just play scenes. And in fact, the whole fucking thing starts with this background and somebody making shadow puppets for no goddamn reason. But a lot of it is him on set, but in the background, there's a projection and they just put other scenes up there for no reason. And then at a certain point, when we're getting really near the climax here, he walks up steps in front of the screen that were also like green screened. So he just seems to sort of be walking up invisibly, and he gets up to a certain point, and the climax of the film, in which the power of sunlight itself blows the doors off of darkness's chambers, and the sunlight floods in and threatens to hurt darkness, and he's trying to struggle against it all. But in this version, the doors are blown away, and on the other side is the guitar player doing a guitar solo. It's just ridiculous in a way that I miss. Like, I remember when music videos suddenly got really clever and innovative. I miss back when they were just innovative, but not clever. Like, when they were just like, let's just put some weird shit in here. And I would recommend to anyone who wants, go look up Is Your Love Strong Enough, and you will find this video. It's the first hit on YouTube, and it's incredibly 80s and incredibly fascinating to watch, and really not well thought out. And I miss those videos where, like, we're gonna insert the performers in the story in a way that makes no sense. Not in the movie itself, because that's the way you do it, is you actually make the band have a point in the movie, and then you can just use that footage. But this is like, no, we just have them and we're just gonna stick them in there and use footage to make it look like a similar but different story. And I miss that. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world. When we started, we were funded by grant money, specifically earmarked to study the long-term effects of aspartame in large savannah cats. And to date, we have zero data, but we still ostensibly are working on that. So we're the only podcast in the world that. I feel like these are getting sloppier. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 597.
I still have this half-hearted dream that I'm going to make up a new opening theme for people who listen on audio for episode 600 and going forward. I even downloaded some software and stuff, but literally haven't opened the software. So,
wow.
Yeah. Those of you just joining us, we have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. You should write into that email address with whatever you feel like. Email stuff, things you want us to talk about, questions you have for us, topics you think would be interesting, birth announcements. I don't fucking care. The hat magically on its own will make us talk about them on the show, and it'll be on the internet. And so it'll be like you're famous. Do that. Actually, speaking of emails, I'm wondering if you can explain to me. I mean, okay, I'm wondering if you can explain part of this to me. Some of it is the mysteries of the internet. I went to Gmail today in the web browser to my new email account that I'm using because I'm getting rid of the old one. And in spam was an email from you that just said shiny and had an emoticon.
Yeah.
Or an emoji. So I don't want you to speculate on why you ended up in spam. I have some theories in general involving your intrinsic character as a person. I think that's my question to you vis-a-vis getting the email. What? Was that you responding to me saying I had a new email?
Yeah.
Okay. Because you changed the subject line or something. Like, I don't think you hit reply. I think you must have, because you were testing out the new email, so you probably made a new one. So I was like, I feel like there's supposed to be a link here or something.
No. Sure.
It is fascinating to see what different people do when you tell them your email is changing. Because some of them are like, okay, I'm writing this to see if it's correct because I'm putting it in my contact info. This makes sense.
Well,
I had some people. I'm sorry?
Part of it was that. Part of it was
I didn't reply, but I did get it. It was spam, though.
Part of it was that if I sent you something, I thought it would be easier to just add that email to the contact I already had,
yeah,
which wasn't true. I still had to manually put it in, yeah, or whatever, but I also did kind of want to send you something to that email, make a little joke or whatever. The timing of it might have made more sense if it didn't go in your spam.
Yeah. And my phone doesn't pick up on that, which is how I've been reading it mostly, but I went to the thing and there's the spam. And I BCC'd everybody, even though I sent it to that new address. So I don't have my contacts there. So right. I recently went back and like moved it. And some people, because I put it for like anybody who might conceivably still want to email. And some of them we haven't talked in a long time. So I got one or two that were like, hey, how you been? What's up? This is what I've been doing. That also makes sense to me. And other people who just said, thanks. And I was like, all right. I mean, but the thanks was to the new email. So it wasn't like they just hit reply reflexively.
Yeah.
So, but I shouldn't talk too bad because at least one of them is a listener. But I mean, it was fine. I just was, I was funny to me. How's your week been?
Terrible.
Your wife's been playing a lot of games on PlayStation that I didn't think you could play on PlayStation. Like what I would consider mobile games.
Yep.
That's weird.
Well, he's been home sick, so.
Oh.
And she finds, I don't know, she got it in her head that these games would be particularly diverting, even more so than regular games. Because, you know, ordinary games,
well, with less potential effort.
Yeah. And she takes them kind of seriously. She wants to play them. Yeah. She wants to whatever. Really pay attention to what's going on, but she doesn't have the energy for that. These would be games that would be games, but, you know, like you said, not taxing at all.
Well, and I should say, I'm not surprised that she's playing them. I didn't know you could play them on a PlayStation.
I didn't either, but
I was like, whoa, I should get Fallout Shelter. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, this was the idea she got, and it worked because she's done it with not just one, but two games. She did Fallout Shelter, as you just mentioned, and another one's, I don't know what's called.
I don't know, but I did see two that I specifically thought like that, and I can't remember.
Lemonade, something about a lemonade stand or something. Yeah. I told her about Cookie Clicker.
Cookie Clicker, yes.
I told her about that one.
Which spawned the whole genre. There's a lot of them. I think my favorite is still Cthulhu Clicker that I played.
But, I mean, she couldn't do this on the PS4.
She could do it on the PS4. Oh.
That's, I think, the thing.
Hmm. All
right. But it's really weird to see this, you know, it's a mobile game, and to see it filling up a big television. It's really weird. But, I mean, it works. So,
yeah.
And like I said, she could, it let her play a game without, you know, at the low energy she was with her, with her illness. She has some kind of cold, not COVID, but
I'm putting so many hours into Horizon Forbidden West. I'm really kind of surprised he's not finished yet. And I say this because I'm putting tons of hours in Final Fantasy, and every time I'm on, I see him playing Horizon Forbidden West. So when are you gonna finish that, Azure Talon? Do it. All right.
Yeah.
You've had a bad week. I know a little bit about this. Do you want to talk at all about it, or do you want me to take over so you don't have to talk about it?
Well, I mean, it's just school stuff and the like. I'm not really going to get involved. And a few other things we talked about, but no, I don't have to talk about any of that stuff. We can talk about your week. I'm very eager to hear about it.
It's not a bunch. Things are good, except I'm still not sleeping well. We're getting on to like months of me not sleeping well.
Is this related at all to your change in diet, do you think? Or
I don't think so, because again, it started long before that.
Oh, okay, sure.
This has been going on for quite a few months.
That's what you just said, really.
Sometimes it can relate, because actually I've had some indigestion issues recently with the diet, that luckily Monday I'm going to talk to the nutritionist and see. But it varies a little bit. A lot of it is just having trouble turning off my brain, and there's other things. And then sometimes there are specific things. So like the other night, I couldn't sleep because my brain was doing things. And one of the techniques I use sometimes is I get up and I take a short shower. It's sort of a variant of when I used to go swimming if I couldn't sleep, but the pool's not working. So I get up, and sometimes this is, you know, the temperature change is good. I take a cold shower, I take a hot shower, depending on what it is. And sometimes it's just sort of a reset. But so I take, and I keep the lights off in the bathroom, so it's all dark and everything, and that sort of soothing. I get in the shower, and our shower head is a big, it's on an angle, so it's not like a rainfall shower head, but it kind of looks like it's a big, like, actually, hold on here, I can show you. It looks like this. And I can show you this because in the middle of the night, I'm trying to adjust the shower head slightly, and it fucking breaks off in the dark, in the middle of the night. So, short version, I did not get to sleep soon after that. And I spent a good 10 or 15 seconds going, we are so fucked. Our shower is just this pipe that just sprays one jet of water. And then I remembered that we have a second shower head. It's one of those that has a detachable separate one. And I could just switch it to that. And so it's still not great. And I ordered a new one and it'll get here. But in the time being, it's still a shower head. So it's not like we're fucking bathing with the hose in our face. Like, but yeah, so, and then I was like, I'm gonna have to tell Trish about it. And then I forgot in the morning. I went back to sleep because I was so tired, because I don't got a job so I can do that. And I woke up at like 10 with a text from Trish that says, I don't know what happened in the shower, but I can't fix it. You're gonna have to order a new one. And I was like, oh, sorry, I knew that. I forgot to tell you. I'm so sorry. But yeah, so I'm a shower head. Got some settings here. We like it. I got the exact same one again. It's very nice. And I like that extra thing. Like, good for washing your undercarriage, as I like to say it. There's some things that just the shower head ain't gonna reach. And so it's good to have that option. Nobody ever believes me, but it really is handy. Been playing a lot of Final Fantasy. Been watching bits and pieces of things. It hasn't gone well. We haven't watched much of it. I finally watched the first episode of Arcane on Netflix. Did you ever watch Arcane, the League of Legends animated show? I'm a little surprised you guys didn't get that. That strikes me as a thing that would have been right up your alley. It's, I think what they hope is of a franchise of, you know, the League of Legends video game.
Yeah.
It has lots of disparate characters from different settings or whatever. And this is essentially like an origin story for, I think, a couple of the characters. And it's a dystopian sort of steampunk world and these two orphaned sisters and things that happen. And I only watched one episode. It has a great voice cast. The story looks good, pretty standard stuff. The animation is amazing. It is gorgeous. I kind of don't care what the story ends up being. It's just so pretty to look at. But only watched one episode so far. We also watched one episode so far of the Apple TV show Roar. Do you know this one?
Mm-mm.
This is a new one there. It's an anthology show. It is hard to explain, especially based just on the trailer and then the first episode. What I would say is it is a female, arguably feminist focused sort of Black Mirror show almost. The first episode is a weird speculative fiction thing, and Issa Rae is the main star, but Issa Rae stars in that one. Nicole Kidman stars in one. They have a lot of very big name actors leading this, and it is very good. It is very much. We watched it and it was good, and I'm like, I want to watch the rest. I want to take a little break before I do, though, because it's pretty heavy stuff, but it's good. I would recommend it.
Apple TV, you said?
On Apple TV, yeah. We also on Apple TV started watching The Essex Serpent and watched two episodes of that before I fucking bailed. The Essex Serpent is apparently based off of a historical novel that I'd never heard of by the same title, and it's Claire Danes and Tom Hiddleston, and it's in somewhere in a small village in Essex. There's the rumor of this sea serpent that's come to kill people and shit, and Claire Danes is a rich science-loving aristocratic woman. This is 19th century England, and she recently lost her husband, and so she's free to do what she wants, and she goes out there to study it. And meanwhile, the charismatic Tom Hiddleston vicar is very opposed to, he doesn't think there is a serpent. He wants people to stop talking about it. They're sort of at loggerheads there, but then also there's like a romance brewing, but he's married and da, da, da. And two episodes in, I still don't really know what's going on, and it was really boring and maybe really badly written. I'm not sure. They just, because they're addressing issues of like classism and stuff in just really dull, ham-fisted ways. Like, you know how sometimes you talk about how like a show's ethical message is like a freshman in college philosophy class? This is like before college. This is like if you would debate classism and economics somewhere in high school, to me at least. And I don't. And I apologize if that comes off as condescending for other people who are like, this is really deep. I'm like, it just didn't feel very deep to me. And also, again, super boring. And it's only got six episodes. And if I can watch a third of those and still not really know or care what's going on, I'm out. So I'm out. So
fair enough.
I haven't had a lot of luck. The thing I've had the most luck with on YouTube, there is a channel called Atomic Abe Productions, I believe. I don't know what the channel is supposed to be about. I do know they have a reoccurring feature in it called Behind the Backdoor Pilot, where they do a retrospective on various TV shows out of the 80s and 90s and the backdoor pilots that they had. And I find those hilarious and fascinating. And like way more than I realized. I forget what the first one I started with, but there were like seven backdoor pilots for whatever. For some sitcom, I can't remember which one it was. And then just today I was watching how Chips did a couple of backdoor pilots, one of which was about a force of ninja cops that in retrospect, I'm like, that would have been awesome. I saw one that talked about the Bionic Dog, which was going to be a spinoff of the Bionic Woman, which was a spinoff of the $6 million Man. I don't know. I just have really fun. I remember as a kid watching backdoor pilots and not understanding what was going on. I would watch and be like, how come the people from this show aren't really in this episode?
Yeah, they can be really confusing until you catch on to them.
And I didn't as a kid. I was just like, that was kind of a dumb. Why'd you do that? And it was only years later. I was like, oh, no, this was them. Pitching an
Warehouse 13 did that once, had one.
Did that?
They had a backdoor pilot for they were gonna do something with H.G. Wells.
That's tricky because she was a reoccurring character.
Right. So when
that was probably harder to spot.
No, because the way you could spot it when they did it in Warehouse 13 is not only did that feature her more, but it featured other characters that would presumably be in her show. These side characters were in it a lot. Like you can imagine a Warehouse 13 episode maybe having a lot of HG in it, but not a lot of HG and all of these other characters that they seem to want you to care about, but you're never going to see them again on Warehouse 13. So obviously they're setting you up to see them in something.
Well, and I found out Murder, She Wrote did not just backdoor pilots, but what were called bookend episodes. And I don't remember this, even though I watched a lot of Murder, She Wrote. Basically, I think it was season 5. Angela Lansbury's getting fucking tired. And so the deal was she agreed to be in 13 episodes for season 5, but there were 22 episodes. And so the other 9 were what they apparently call bookend episodes, where basically it starts and J.B. Fletcher is like, oh, hi, I didn't see you there. You know, I was just thinking about this old student of mine. And then, like, it would fade off to this other thing that was a backdoor pilot in most cases. Or, you know, there was this novelist that I always was inspired by, and they did one that was, like, set in the 1940s or whatever and stuff like that. Or she'd get mail and it was a tape recording of somebody's like, I wanted to tell you about this adventure I had recently. And they had 9 of those fucking things. Not all of them were meant to be backdoor pilots, but they had 9 of those in season 5. And I remember like one of them.
I've gotten faked out with those types of things before. In Monk, they had an episode where his neighbor was like Tony Shalhoub, I don't think was even in it. Or it might have been a bookend type thing like you're talking about. Maybe he was in the beginning and end. And I thought, oh, are they going to do something with this guy? This doesn't make any sense. But then I read a little bit behind the scenes and a lot of stuff that happens on Monk that way. It's because the cast was frequently wanting more money and wanting to renegotiate for things. And so they'd frequently make episodes to prove to everybody, including sometimes Tony Shalhoub,
Do it without him. Yeah.
This is what we could do that, without you.
That happened with Chips, apparently. In late seasons, there were like 6 or 7 non-Eric Estrada episodes, and it was always basically when they were renegotiating contracts. But no, that one that I watched today with the ninja cops from Chips. So it starts with Ponch and the white guy. Like anybody cares.
I don't remember.
Well, and also it changed mid-series and who the fuck even gave a shit. But
I don't think
they pull over this guy and he's drunk and he's got these classified documents and they look at them and they're basically like, we don't know what the hell these are. We should send them up the chain. And so they give them to somebody else and they get sent off to this division of ninja cops. 4-7 it was called. And they have a whole adventure related to it. And then at the very end, we come back and their captain comes out and is like, you know, that thing a few weeks ago that you said on from the guy, you got a commendation for that. And they're like, really? We got a commendation? Cool. And they got a freeze frame. And like, they were in it for a total of 3 minutes. the whole episode. But what I especially love is this was the final episode of that season. Frequently, it was a final episode of the season when they'd sneak these in. And the show didn't get picked up for series. But one of the guys on the show, the very next season, starting in the very first episode, he was the new white guy playing a different character. But they got rid of the old white guy, apparently by putting something up on the billboard saying he's now working on his uncle's ranch in Wyoming. And then we had this new guy.
Hmm.
Also, the lead guy in the Ninja Cops thing wearing an eye patch, which was hilarious, is the dude who was Hunter in the show, Hunter. So that was kind of weird to see.
I mean, there were a lot of people don't realize in the 70s and 80s, there were a lot of shows that like were taking place in the same universe kind of stuff. And they didn't necessarily have backdoor pilots, but they did spin off, and you know, like the Jeffersons spun off from All
Jeffersons
in the Family.
Jeffersons and
Maude mm-hmm.
both came off of All in the Family. Mork and Mindy and Laverne and Shirley and something else that I can't remember now came off of Happy Days.
Happy Days, yeah. Happened all the time.
Jerry Orbach had a one season show, The Law and Harry McGraw. That was actually a spinoff of Murder, She Wrote.
I didn't know that.
The one that for some reason has always stuck in my head, and I didn't watch the show regularly and I wasn't a fan of it, so I don't know why I watched it at all, but I did. There was a backdoor pilot on Married with Children involving a pre-Friends Matt LeBlanc and this other guy as a father-son who basically were always trying to do get-rich-quick schemes. And it actually went to series for like a hot second. And it was bad. I also found out about the Jim Brewer and Dave Chappelle Tool Time spinoff that went to series, except they ditched Jim Brewer and got a different random white guy. And it only managed, they filmed 13 episodes and only aired 4 of them.
Jason Bateman's first show, It's Your Move, was a spinoff of Silver Spoons.
Oh.
Bateman's character, that character was in Silver Spoons.
Jason Bateman's first show to me is always Valerie, later the Hogans. Because they did with Roseanne, where they had Roseanne and then they got rid of Roseanne, so they called it the Connors. They had a show called Valerie that was Valerie Harper as a single mom, and then Valerie Harper fucking died. And so they brought in their aunt, Sandy Duncan, and they called the show the Hogans. And Jason Bateman was the oldest boy, teenage heartthrob. He was the Mike Seaver, if you were the Kirk Cameron of that show.
He was a lot younger when he was on It's Your Move, I'm pretty sure. Younger than he wasn't a teen.
Silver Spoons was earlier too. There is no way this conversation can be interesting to anyone except you or and me, but I'm down for it. I'm digging this whole thing.
Dragnet.
I grew up on sitcoms, so it's just so much there.
This is older. Dragnet, Adam 12, and Emergency. Those are older shows, but they were also set in the same universe.
Well, fucking Trapper John.
Supposed to be part of MASH.
Was
whatever.
Technically supposed to be the same guy for, I mean, it was never the same
MASH
actor.
No.
But it was supposed to be, which is always weird because I was too old. Like Trapper John had come and gone by the time I was old enough, and MASH was still around. But I remember Hawkeye calling Trapper John, and I knew that that was a different show. And I'm like, in this universe, does that show exist and it's earlier? Or is it a thing in that show that he's nicknamed after the character from MASH? And it was only in recent years that I'm like, no, that's straight up supposed to be dude from MASH.
Now, is he supposed
even
to be the guy?
The timelines can't possibly match up because it's the fucking Korean War.
And I know, but yeah, that's right. I don't know if in the book, if his name's Trapper. And so it's based on the character in the book and not in the TV show. I don't know.
But yeah, all sorts of weird ones like that. And if you ever watch the episode that spawned Mork and Mindy, which apparently wasn't a backdoor pilot, it was essentially a spinoff from a guest star. They did this one episode and they were like, people fucking love this dude. Let's give him a show.
But weird Happy Days.
He's completely different in that show. Yeah. He's not funny. He's creepy and monotone and he scares me. I remember seeing that show as a kid and I was frightened.
Yeah, was
he had extreme powers. And I mean, I think the thing ends up being a dream sequence or whatever, but yeah, it's funny. Trish gets annoyed. So, you know, there's a whole thing. There's websites dedicated to it. Saint Elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Saint Elsewhere turns out to be all in the mind of a 14-year-old autistic boy looking at a snow globe that for some reason has a hospital in it. The whole show. But the problem is that show ran for many years and had many guest stars and crossovers with other shows. And those shows had crossovers. So basically, almost every TV show that exists is just in the imagination of a 14-year-old autistic boy looking at a snow globe. But Trish gets really frustrated because some of the connections are very tenuous. And the best example of this is many, many shows have used the fake cigarette brand Morley Cigarettes. And people take this as evidence that it's all the same universe. And then and she's like, no, it just kind of sounds like Marlboro. Like, it's not, you could maybe call it an Easter egg, but it doesn't, because like, once you start including Morley Cigarettes as meaning it's all in the same universe, you pull fucking Buffy the Vampire Slayer into Saint Elsewhere. And it goes like, it gets, and I think X-Files also had Morley Cigarettes, like it gets everywhere. I do love those connections though. They're always funny. But yeah, so if you look up Atomic Abe Productions, they have a bunch of these. And I dig them. I don't know why. I think it's fun. Did watch a movie last night. Probably worth mentioning. It's 2002 film that ever since it sort of came out, I've had people in my life that are like, you should see this. It's great. And I never got around to it. And something recently made me think of it. And so we watched it. I think it's accurate to call it a cult classic film. Called the Bubba Hotep. You hear about this thing?
That sounds familiar.
You hear about this?
I might have seen
Bubba Hotep. Well, it's real easy to explain, except not. Like the short explanation is real simple and big explanation is impossible. It is the story of an aging Elvis Presley who faked his own death and now lives in a nursing home in East Texas, teams up with a black man who claims to be John F. Kennedy, who the CIA spirited him away and cut a chunk out of his brain and then dyed him black so no one could ever tell it was him. They team up to fight off a mummy that is preying upon the residents of this nursing home in East Texas. So yeah, black JFK and retired after he died Elvis fight a mummy in a nursing home in East Texas. Hmm.
Okay, no, I've never seen this, but I have heard of it.
Yeah, and it is best known for Elvis being played by Bruce Campbell of Evil Dead fame. Which it is. It's not just known for that. That actually happens. And I don't want to say he doesn't do a great job. He doesn't. He is definitely the POV character that we spend time with. The black JFK is played by Ozzie Davis, who fucking carries the thing. And I mean, I just love Ozzy Davis. He's always been great. But he really brings it home for me. Trish and I both used the phrase "not really my thing" when we were talking about it afterwards. I don't necessarily think it is a bad movie. I'm super glad it exists because it was definitely trying something different, and I like that about it. It is a comedy. It's a horror comedy, but it's a comedy. It's a straight up comedy that is remarkably bleak and upfront about the horrors of wasting away in a nursing home, especially when you have no family. And so we're like 20 minutes in and I'm like, I haven't laughed yet and I'm getting real sad. I need you to stop. And it's definitely a comedy. I mean, it gets fucking oddball crazy later and I laughed plenty, but like, it's just a weird mesh of being like real, real bleak, but then it's a comedy and it's a screwball comedy in a lot of ways. And so that was odd, but it's on Tubi, so anybody can check it out for free. And it's only like 90 minutes. It's definitely interesting. I definitely think it's an interesting cultural artifact. And if you're like me and really like it when Bruce Campbell gets work, but can't be bothered to watch Burn Notice or whatever, it's just fun to see him doing something again. So I like that. I have zero sense of when we started this episode. But we can get to an email. Our last email. So once again, this will be our last episode. It was nice knowing y'all. Read that beautiful email.
Okay.
Wait, I want to pause for a second because I almost said it again here. So I'm currently not game mastering for anybody. But when I did, I developed a habit, which is when we're talking about something we're role playing or whatever, and I need to tell them, okay, it's time for you to make a dice roll for something. I got in a habit accidentally of saying, roll that beautiful bean footage.
Commercial.
Exactly. From Bush's Baked Beans, where the Bush's, dude tells his dog, Duke, the secret recipe. And the joke is that the dog can talk and is entertaining offers. And there was a many, many years campaign built around this. Anyway, go ahead. Email.
So this is from Jazz.
I've heard of her.
Yeah, I have too.
She's that kind of music where you don't actually follow the melody, right? That's
how she asks. Her question is.
Her question is.
What do you find to be the similarities or differences between the versions of people that you know that you carry around in your head and the people themselves that exist independently of you?
Everyone is way dumber than I think they are in the whole world.
The difference.
This is an interesting question. I don't think there's a generality to it for, I mean, it's very case by case, I think. And it's also an interesting question because to a degree, what she's asking is compare and contrast how you think people are with how they actually are. And it's like how I think they are is how I think they are. So to my mind, that would be the same.
It's more like if I have a conversation with you in my head, which I do all the time, and with Jazz.
You're not imagining it. I'm talking to you telepathically.
How is that person I'm talking to when I'm having a conversation with you in my head? How is that person different than you?
All right. I know this was just a random example, but I want to hear more. I like this. How is it different? They probably yell less.
I mean, I know that you don't. Like when you and I are having a conversation in my head, I've never really thought about this before. So I'm just kind of going off the cuff here.
Which one's which? You don't know?
But I'm pretty sure that with you in particular, I'm pretty sure that you probably in my head kind of stay on topic better.
I mean,
you don't get tempted to do a bit or tell a joke.
This.
You just stay
focused. If I don't in your head, that's kind of scary, and you might need extra professional help.
Right?
Like, that is a very good point.
But I mean, in the real world, you would get distracted by doing a bit or telling a joke. I don't just mean like going off. I don't just mean going off on tangents, because that happens sometimes in my head. But like the other stuff that you just can't seem to resist to tell a joke or to do a bit or something.
And the times where we'll be having conversations and we have to pause and be like, okay, three tangents back, let's get back to this thing, which happens. I mean, in my life in general, but with you and I in particular.
Because a lot of the conversations I have with you are of a serious nature, because I'm having that conversation with you in my head because I'm interested in your opinion about a fairly serious matter, right? Sometimes.
And William is one of those few people who was born only with an angel on one shoulder. And so I've had to step in to take the other role.
I'm sure I have sometimes conversations with you and Jazz. This is true with Jazz too, that are of a creative nature. And maybe in those cases, you might riff a little bit more. But I think for the most part, you stay on task in my head more than you really do.
Am I nicer to you in your head?
Well,
because I'd be disappointed if that was the case. I like to think I've really like undermined your psyche, and that even imaginary me is like constantly.
I mean, that's part of the you not riffing. I mean, because I don't, you know, when you're mean to me, I don't take that seriously. You're just fooling around. So in my head,
all right, challenge accepted. I mean,
knock it off. So in my head, no, you're not doing those things, mostly because you're being serious. Plus, if there's a critical voice in my head, it always really means, it's never kidding. It always means it. And it's never you or anybody who cares about me. It's always this, I don't know, some voice in my head that belongs to some dark version of me or something. There's not really any room in my
Transformers, the movie era, Orson Welles.
There's not just really any room in my head for critical voices that aren't me. And I don't generally think of you or anybody who cares about me is constantly being critical of me. So no, that doesn't happen. And so when I'm having a conversation with Jazz, I think when I'm having a conversation in my head with anybody, if it's Abby or Jazz or a few of them, my other friends, I think I'll have a conversation with Dave, you know, because we've done role-playing together and stuff. And so I kind of get an idea of how he would look at things and see things. I think they're always fairly serious conversations. And so across the board, I think they might crack jokes or act in an informal or joking or kidding way less than they would in real life. Because the reason I'm talking to them is because I'm trying to figure something out. And I think their voice is going to help me figure it out.
So if I stay really serious, are you in danger of thinking you're imagining me?
No.
I now officially hate this question because it has caused me to realize I'm a complete narcissist.
What do you mean?
When I have conversations in my head with people, and the more I think about it, the more I believe this is without exception, I'm the only one talking. I'm lecturing them, essentially. I am giving my argument for something we've disagreed on in the past, or something I think we would disagree on in the past, or something I want them to understand, and they do not respond at all. So
my people say things.
I'm conversations just a self-centered piece of shit.
I have conversations with my mom sometimes, you know, my members of my family. And, you know, some people could ask, well, why don't you just like text or talk to these people? Well, it's because they're not long conversations, right? And I'm just going through something at the moment, and I'm just asking myself, what would Dad say, or what would Scott say, or what would Tony say? And it's just a real brief thing. It's not this long involved thing. Or so
I don't do that at all. The ones in my head are conversations that I can't have for whatever reason.
Well, sometimes
either we already had them, or I know this is not something I could actually I wish I could talk to them about this, but I know I can't.
I mean, I'd probably do that a little bit too, but another reason someone will come up is because I'm working through something and I don't need to talk to that person. It has nothing to do with them really. I just think that their voice can help, right? So I don't really have to call them up and explain, hey, I was just having this random thought and I decided I wanted to talk. I don't need, you know, it doesn't need to be like that. I'm just thinking about this thing. Ugh. And I feel like this person might have some insight. So I imagine what they'd say to see if I can figure it out. I mean, I would ask them, I suppose, if I was in a real jam, I thought they knew and I couldn't figure it out. But if I can just stop for a second and think what they would think, sometimes that's enough for me to go, oh yeah, that's the right way to go.
Oh, I hate this so much. Cause like, because you're describing this and my experience is nothing like that at all. Again, I just talk at them. And here's the thing. This happens with us sometimes where we have very different things and that can be cause of worry. It's not a cause of worry. It's cause of dread here, because what you're saying makes sense and seems normal to me.
Oh.
Whereas my experience, I'm like, Jesus Christ, what is wrong with me? Like,
well, I don't know.
The difference between in my head and with actual people is, again, I think literally 100% of the time, nobody in my head ever gets a chance to get a word in. And well, that's fucked up.
Really? I mean, isn't it just...
No, I just tell them things. And I imagine them being there listening to it. That's it. I'm a monster. This what? Is awful. Okay, this is the last episode, not because we're out of emails, but because I am destroyed now. I can't be on the internet anymore. This is awful. I never let anyone talk in my head.
I don't know if my experience is that normal.
It sounds normal to me. It sounds like what people would do. It sounds like you say it, and I'm like, that makes sense. That sounds like a thing one would do in their mind to help them process things, you know, rather than just lecture people in your brain. And again, I cannot think of a single counterexample. I don't think in my life I have ever let anyone talk in my head except me. Jesus.
I mean,
but the good news is, although this particular perspective of it is new, essentially this whole issue is what I've been working on in therapy. Because the key difference between people in my head and people outside my head, and it's not specific to individuals, is I've spent most of my life thinking I get people as a general thing. And that I have a lot of things in common with people, and there are sort of universal things about, if not the human experience, the Western white people society, American experience. And what I am learning now is that that is not at all true. And that a lot of things that I'm like, we're all like this, right? And things that cause me to then try and help people or influence people into doing things the way I think are good because I have found them good or whatever, is at best gibberish and at worst harmful, because their experience is so starkly different from what I think it is. And again, it's sort of, there's a weird sort of narcissism to it, but it's not, I'm not self-obsessed. I just mistakenly thought a lot of things about me are true about everyone to a much broader scale than I think it's real. And that is something I'm dealing with now and is interesting in I'm a horrible person kind of way. There are two main impacts I have found with a lot of people that I know. They are less frustrating now that I'm aware of this, which is a good thing. I don't necessarily like them as well.
Mm.
Because I don't relate to them and feel a commonality like I did which is a nice way of saying they're less like me than I thought, so I don't like them as much. I am history's worst monster. This is all awful. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life going forward from this point. This is terrible. Luckily, I got therapy next Tuesday, so I'm talking about, this is dead. But no, that's the thing is I've spent a lot of life being like, yeah, I understand how people are. They're like a lot. I know those feelings. I experienced them too. And now I'm finding out, oh no, a lot of other people don't experience them. What the fuck are you talking about? And there are certain relationships where I'm not noticing that change as much. You being one of them, because you have always been very upfront about yourself. The way I put it early in my therapy is, you are not mesmerized by my genius. Because the problem is, I think part of why I had this going is I'm pretty good at convincing other people also that they have commonalities with me that they don't actually have. And you, I've got a couple friends like this, but you are a great example, are very seldom unduly influenced by the people around you. Like, you listen and you consider and all this, but it's not like, that sounds good. Yeah, that must be right. Like, and so you've never let me turn you more into, convince you that you are more like me. So I've had less of a feeling like you are, which I think also explains why in the early years of the relationship, I found it frustrating in a lot of ways. Because I couldn't get to this resolution that I now realize is largely fabricated and because of my own ability to persuade people.
But you've maintained a friendship with me that's longer than a lot of the friendships you've had.
Yes, but I didn't expect to at first. It was many years down the road. And again, another leap, because in this whole therapy thing, being like, oh my God, my relationships are not what I think they are. I got to be like, oh, except for a few of them, like William. And we've talked before, there's other reasons why that also applies, because you and I actually do have certain things in common that
a lot of things
that a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
In particular, our perspective on how friendship works. But in the early days, you were a guy I knew that just, I didn't get how his brain, I mean, you, it's the people are stupid years. It's the many years that a whole bunch of us, every time we encountered you, you would be confused by something and we would try to explain it and we would always fail to explain it. And the only thing any of us could come up with was, yeah, William, because people are dumb, which was never a useful explanation for anything.
No, it was it what it was doing, I realized recently.
I mean, don't get me wrong, people are dumb, but
was there was a lot of, from my perspective, there was a lot of begging the question, like, well, what's going on here? Well, people are scared or crazy or stupid. It's like, okay, I hear you saying that, but then what's the reason for that? And of course, there wasn't a reason. You guys were saying this is how they were by nature, and I just couldn't accept that.
Well, and it was because we all, because you come from a unique perspective, and we did have a shared perspective ourselves of this. And it was only years of, let's be honest, you and I essentially arguing the same point in different outfits.
Yeah.
To where I finally, and then it's like, oh, we argued it again. But this time I said this and he said this, and he seemed to understand a little closer. And also I got a little bit why he was confused. And that just chink by chink got to where nowadays I'm like, I actually think I understand what, and how I can say things like, okay, now, William, you're confused. Let me translate it into William. And I'm right. Better at that than I used to be. Or you'll say something and I'll be like, okay, now people are going to hear what you just said and think this. I understand you mean that. And that's not something I could have done in the early years of our friendship.
Yeah.
At all. I mostly hung out with you because you thought I was funny. And I will hang out with anybody who thinks I'm funny.
I do think you're funny.
I know. And I love you for it. And only for it. Maybe the me in your head loves you for other reasons. But for me, it's just that.
An interesting question. Does the you in my head love me for at all? Like, have any particular regard, or are we just having conversations? I mean, I think sometimes.
Well, does each one start with me going, I'm sorry, you were, who are you again? I want to say Murray.
I was just saying before how all of these conversations, most of them are very practical. I mean, even with my mom. So, you know, is it all just intellectual, or is there any emotional stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, but I think for just about everybody that's in there, there have been times where, I mean, not everybody, but like you and Jazz and Mom and Abby or whatever, people that are really close to me, I think there are times where I think to myself, you know, if so-and-so was here right now and I was feeling this way about myself, they'd say this nice, supportive,
and that
kind thing.
What I envision the thing you talk about is what would be for other people, just saying, what would so-and-so think or say to this?
Yeah.
But your brain is populated with puppets, so it has to be acted out.
What's going on in there? Yeah.
A hypothetical. Yeah. Be honest. When you have talked with, are we Muppets?
No.
Are you sure?
That's a good question too. Is there an environment? Is there a place? Because I do think I picture you guys, but I think it's like, it's just like a vaguely
run down 7-Eleven in Wichita. Just,
I mean,
before
it's not
closing.
Like, whoever I'm talking to, we're always in the same place. Like, I never imagine us podcasting when I'm talking to you, you know, even sitting at your house podcasting. We are somewhere, wherever it is, and we're just having a conversation just for ourselves.
I would assume,
but yeah, maybe sometimes. I think,
all right,
I think it's
picture having like a conversation. Look down, are there pancakes and or potato cakes?
I think it's like a dream where your brain just sort of is allowed to fill it in with whatever it wants. And so then it does, and maybe it even morphs and changes into something else. I know it's a place. And I know if I stopped and noted it, which I never do, I'd go, oh, this is this place or that place or a place I've never been before. But I don't do that. The conversation is what I'm involved in. But I do think I always picture the person for sure. And I do think I almost always picture a place, but it's not necessarily a place that I know or recognize or whatever.
One consistency I've learned from the people in my life who I am truly close to and who I truly feel like I know well and care about and are a significant, if not critical, aspect of my life. All of, like, so you fall into this, my wife falls into this. All of you, I would absolutely 100% more than anything never want to be in your brains even for a second. I'm always just like, the way your shit works, I would just immediately panic if I was in there. I could not cope.
I don't reckon I'm in anybody's head except in the capacity that you're talking about of someone wanting to yell at me. I'm sure I'm in a lot of people's heads.
I just
that.
Keep shooting you with those children's suction cup bow and arrows just all the time.
I don't suspect anybody has conversations. I mean, what value would my conversations with them be? Because I don't know anything.
I don't want you to take the fact that my head has turned into an entire cat to be that I'm not taking this seriously.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's just me. I think I'm a weirdo, but.
I mean, you definitely are. No, but the thing you're talking about, again, that sounds normal to me. And what I do sounds like a solipsist.
Do you talk to your therapist ever in your head? I talked to
so
mine.
I'm glad you finished that. I was like, yeah, she gets paid a lot of money for me to talk to her. No, but I think I've talked about this before. I do presuppose what she's going to say. Usually in a session, she'll ask a question and I'll get my answer ready. And my brain is like, as soon as you say that, she's going to say this. So I won't even say it. I'll start thinking about what my response is going to be to the next part. I feel like once or twice I have not necessarily talked to her, but like I'm living my life and I'm like, huh, this is a thing. I should probably bring it up to Aaron next time. And then my head will be like, yeah, Aaron's going to say this.
Mm.
So I think I have done that, but I can't give a specific example, but that feels familiar.
I don't think I
Jazz, I would ever... really love for you to elaborate on this. Cause again, I cannot express how completely you have eradicated my sense of self and self-worth and any hope I had for my future life or me at my value as a human being. But also I find this very interesting. And so I would love for you to extrapolate more and other people get in on it. Especially because some of you only ever interact with William and I in this medium. I mean, podcasts are and celebrity, and I mean, I know we're not, but this kind of thing, we are only talking at you. But you undoubtedly feel, and I think rightly so, we have some sort of relationship. So what do you imagine the difference is between the podcast us and real us? And some of you interact with us on both levels. So what is the difference? I have talked before. I've had to explain to people before because they threatened lawsuits. I do tend to adopt a certain level of a character on here. Not a huge one. I don't say anything dishonest. I crank up the asshole. I don't like that. I don't like how that was worded.
I don't either.
I'm a little bit more of a jerk to sort of create more friction because I think that's more interesting. But only to a degree, and less, I think, as the years go on. So I perceive a difference in podcast Tony and not podcast Tony. But how do the rest of you feel? Go to the blog, themagicalthoughtinghead.com, and tell us. Tell us your feelings on this. Tell us your feelings on Jazz's question. Tell me if you think there's any hope for me or if I should just give up now.
When we started, I thought I would make a lot of things up. And I quickly realized, nah, I'm not going to do that. I didn't want to get into trouble. Yeah, it just seemed too risky.
I do make a lot of things up.
Yeah.
But less than I thought. And to be fair, there was my dead Uncle Ben. That kind of changed the tone. That went very poorly. That went very, very poorly.
The first big attempt that I was going to do was the whole hillbilly magic and my, you know, hillbilly up, you know, background, which it's not untrue. I do have somewhat of a
background. And that was fun.
But I thought, I'm just really gonna go with this and go with this. And I think Blood Sparrow asked one time for more information, and I realized that she was kind of helping me along there, but I also realized, oh crap. I mean, I'm gonna offend somebody, I'm gonna say something stupid or wrong.
We could have been the first podcast to come up with Glass Shark if you had just stuck with it.
No, I was gonna. Okay, that's a good example. Magic. See,
Glass Shark, love fat kid.
Okay, like that.
That's one that thing bit. You gotta know.
How many people do you think are offended by that bit? Now, does it matter? Is it still funny? But see, I'm not the kind of person who could do a bit like that, realize people are offended by it, and then feel good about it. I couldn't. I'd feel terrible. So I just knew where this was going. I knew I wasn't going to be able to do it, so I gave up on it early.
I forgot the best worst part. One of the characters in the Ninja Cop almost spinoff from Chips was a racist puppet called Yin of Yang. What? And he like had the Fu Manchu and stuff. One of the guys would do this puppet, and it was bad.
Wow, that's terrible.
It was terrible, but it was the 80s. I also always forget Eric Estrada's character was named, I forget his first name. Poncho was a nickname. His last name was Poncherelli. So he was supposed to be Italian, I guess.
Hmm.
I mean, that doesn't sound like a Hispanic name to me, Poncherelli. That sounds, I mean, honestly, it sounds like somebody came up with Ponch and was like, how do we come up with a reason to say that? But it doesn't sound Hispanic.
It must sound like Ponches. I
never knew that. And I wanted, like, he could pass for looking Italian, but I think I always knew his name was Eric Estrada. It's in the credits. So like,
they must have thought Ponchez didn't quite sound.
No. I mean, it was the '80s. It might have been fun, but no. It makes me uncomfortable now. Ponchez.
It makes me uncomfortable saying it.
Yeah. Hey, at least you didn't turn up the asshole.
Oh yeah. Thank God for that.
I felt bad about that. All right, we're done. I mean, we've established we're done with the podcast forever. I'm done with interacting with humans because nobody deserves this. If you want some of the last vestiges of my existence in the outside world, I wrote a book called Odd Wings. You can find it on smashwords.com. It costs $3. It's pretty good. I'm writing a sequel. I may stop now that I've learned this about myself, but William's got a bunch of junk, but he put it on a really dumb named website, so it's hard to find. Aether Theater. Although Final Fantasy spells Aether the same way, so that'll help you. You get a lot of Final Fantasy fans. So
okay.
So go check out all our stuff. I was cleaning the other day and found my stickfa.
Good.
And it's hilarious because I forgot, because I fidget. I used to fuck with it. So what I actually found was the wingless body of a dragon with the upper torso and head of a young woman. And then just a bunch of pieces of other things.
You were the only
boy.
You were the only one on the team who, like, everybody else, the gender of the stickfa matched their own gender. You were the only one
that was an
exception to that.
I've always been a little different.
That was a good right call on my part, though, right?
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, it was a dragon. I looked through that catalog. It absolutely would have been my choice I was going to get a stickfa. You did. I think you did well with everybody. You picked them all out pretty good.
I tried to find something people would like. I thought they were fun little toys. Good to have on your desk. I thought.
I just threw out a lot of old office toys yesterday, but I kept like two or three, and one was that. And that was rough because I had to find all the pieces in the box. All right, people. Go about your business, but come back next week and see if we're here. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe it'll just be William. Maybe it'll be William and dude from a failed backdoor pilot that we had. Oh, we should do a backdoor pilot. Like, we'll bring other people in and we'll just be in like the first 2 minutes of the episode and then it'll be other people. Okay.
Good idea.
Tune in next time when we will try and make a spinoff. Don't know what it'll be called.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.